Welcome to the next chapter of Mina's Star, a near-future epic about humanity's reckoning after the collapse of the insane logic of mutually assured destruction, tracing how the ruins of the nation-state order give rise to the Charter. A new consensus-driven civilization built on the principle that every life is sovereign. In this chapter, we follow Adebayo Ogunle as a sudden disaster on Mercury propels him and his fellow trainees into an urgent deep space rescue mission, forcing them to balance precision, loyalty, and exhaustion under immense technical pressure. Amid orbital hazards and a deteriorating partnership with the pilot Aieste, Adebayo uncovers signs that the mission itself may be compromised in ways no one is prepared for. Chapter 7. Arnhem Space Center, Northern Territory, Australia, 2045. As the sun rose over Rangoora Beach, it filled the horizon's vast expanse in deep orange light. Trainees for the upcoming Mercury and Venus seed colony crews bounded down the sandy path past the bright yellow and black signs warning of crocodiles and advising visitors to stay clear of the water's edge. They laughed and called to one another, their shadows stretching long in the dawn. The tradition was to greet the first light before selection day, so they gathered high above the tideline where the beach curved toward the Arafura arcology. Adebayo Ogunle, tall and lean even among the athletes of the program, barely noticed the sea or the blaze of color spreading across it, because his attention was fixed on Aieste Petraite. Her ash-blonde hair caught the sunlight, and her gray eyes carried a precision sharp as steel. Around them, the air was warm and alive as if the world was holding its breath. But Aieste was quiet, which meant she was angry. As they lagged behind the others and the laughter drifted toward the dunes, Aieste turned and jabbed a finger into Adebayo's chest, then winced and drew her hand back, narrowing one eye against the sting as she said, "Even your body makes me angry." She leaned closer until her shadow crossed his face, searching his eyes as she demanded, "Why did the board put you on the Mercury mission in advance of selection day?" Adebayo, waiting a moment for her to cool, watched the light on her hair, then reached out a hand and said quietly, "Don't worry. I love you and we'll still work together like professionals." Which made her expression soften for an instant, surprised by the first time he had ever said he loved her. But then it hardened again as she shook her head and said, "You don't get it." She pushed his arm away, then stamped on his foot and walked away down the path, disappearing into the orange glare as if swallowed by the sun. Adebayo had overcome so much adversity to be in this moment, but he felt defeated not being able to understand Aieste. Seeking to steady himself, he turned toward the Arafura arcology that rose where the outback met the ocean, a dense slice of Manhattan or Tokyo without streets. The arcology had been built to socialize people to a new way of living in the confined space of off-world habitats. The arcology drew in resources from around the world, compressing their transformation into finished products within tightly controlled manufacturing lines that simulated the self-sufficiency the Venus and Mercury habitats would require. The mission trainers constantly reiterated that each habitat would live on the razor's edge of collapse, so every person who aspired to live among the stars had to first make it in the arcology. He smiled at the memory of the first time they had met. She had been his trainee, always arguing with the distributed control system, cursing in three languages while he fell for her. Adebayo thought to himself, "We lived together for 2 years with so many happy memories, and now we can be on the same mission. Why is she so angry?" On the walk back to the training center, what hurt Adebayo wasn't Aieste avoiding him, but laughing at someone else's joke. He was so lost in his thoughts that he didn't notice the mission director's message until someone said, "Director Namajira says everyone must come back right now." After months of working together, the trainees wordlessly organized to carry a trainee who had twisted an ankle, taking turns to move quickly and efficiently toward the training center at the edge of the Arnhem Space Center. Once it had been abandoned, its hangars rusted and the control towers stripped of glass. Mirov Enterprises rebuilt it from the ground up, pouring new concrete, raising composite domes, and turning the ruins into the heart of the launch network. The sight of the gantries reaching into the sky and the steady rhythm of launches, recoveries, and the constant testing for resonance frequencies still took Adebayo's breath away, a reminder of how close he was to reaching his dream of living among the stars. As Adebayo and the trainees entered the main hall, they were ushered into the auditorium by their instructors. Adebayo's stomach clenched at the memories of engineering competitions, Shakespeare performances during their downtime, and the pressure of examinations that washed people out. Adebayo thought to himself, "Our first kiss was when we played the lead roles of Romeo and Juliet." The hall that smelled of coffee, oil, and ozone had always been three parts camaraderie, two parts glory, and one intense part terror. But today, the rows were filled with technicians, pilots, and scientists instead of just trainees. Dr. Eliza Namajira, wearing the white robe of the mission director, stood at the podium with head administrator Ben Azamat seated behind her. She had the calm of someone who had seen more failures than triumphs and worked through both. Her voice filled the room. A few hours ago, the Aurelia outpost on Ancor Vallis, Mercury, lost half its crew when a heat pump failed after microfractures spread through the piping system, the result of flawed metallurgy and a failure to follow the replacement protocol required for extreme thermal stress. Around half of the staff were not wearing their instant deployment suits with rebreathers, so when there was a pressure blowout, the words landed like a shockwave. Everyone in the room shifted uneasily, having been drilled to always wear the ready suits that auto-sealed on pressure loss to save lives. Director Namajira continued speaking. "The survivors are working with engineering to jury-rig a partial loop to stay alive. But most of the technical staff was lost, and instructing a biologist what to do through a 10-minute light lag is far from ideal. We are moving the launch forward with modified crews. 72 hours from now, the rescue vehicle leaves orbit. Go to your instructors for orders." Following the dismissal, everyone moved quickly to their specialized areas, the chaos of motion unified by a single purpose. The Venus team joined their colleagues to act as a red team or a sounding board as needed. Every conversation, every line of code, every checklist pointed toward one goal of saving their stranded crewmates on Mercury. Adebayo knew why he had been placed on the Mercury mission. The Mirov Enterprises board had broken protocol by switching him from Venus to Mercury, but shortly afterward, through a remote EIC drop, he received his true orders to embed with the repair work crew destined for the damaged deep space laser array that provided acceleration for shuttles between Earth and Mercury. Adebayo wondered to himself, "Is someone on the board working for the EIC?" Adebayo joined the safety team, and as the most senior safety team member, he asked his shift leads to walk through where the procedural failures occurred. His tablet flashed a notification, so he subtly listened to Aiste's message through an earpiece. "Let's just be friends." Adebayo felt as if he were falling through the air. He had not felt this kind of panic since he was a 6-year-old survivor of the Lake Kivu limnic eruption, on the next day. The hangar floor vibrated with the steady pulse of generators feeding the launch pads. Crews in orange vests moved through the noise, their voices half lost beneath the whine of hydraulic lifts and the rhythm of status calls. With his checklist open, Adebayo moved through the crowd as the redundant reviewer, his task to catch what the rush might miss. He confirmed that the safety relays were sealed and the fuel lines tagged before continuing toward the pilot's staging area. The whole base moved in rhythm, each motion feeding the next. Beneath the floor, the vibration testing rigs ran another resonance sweep, deep enough for the sound to travel through metal and bone until it settled in his ribs. Across the floor, Aiste stood with the pilots near the spacecraft mock-up. Her hair was tied back under her flight cap, and she was speaking to the flight dynamics officer, gesturing sharply toward the simulation console. Adebayo hesitated, then crossed the floor and waited until the officer stepped away. "Aiste," he said quietly, keeping his tone even so it would not draw attention. "Can we talk later? Just a few minutes when you are done here?" She said nothing for 5 heartbeats, her face as inscrutable as her heart. "I have always known you carry secrets, Adebayo," she said at last. "I tried to accept that, telling myself it came from growing up as an orphaned survivor of the Lake Kivu disaster. But when you told me the board secured your spot before selection day, I knew it was something more dangerous." Her voice was flat, not cruel, but so controlled that it stung more than anger could. She looked around, then leaned forward to whisper, "I will not report you, but I thought being on separate planets would end things naturally. Since we are on the same team, it is better for everyone if we end things now." Adebayo froze. Outwardly, he seemed to be weighing her words. A storm of regret, warmth, and acceptance crossed his face. But inwardly, his mind raced at a fever pitch, considering what he might have subconsciously revealed. Knowing a reaction was needed, he nodded then with slumped shoulders. He turned away. He furiously thought, "She only has a suspicion. If she really knew, she would have reported me." A week later, the Mercury team launched. As the crushing weight lifted from Adebayo's chest, it felt like a rhinoceros easing off his ribs as they approached the spaceship assembly point in Earth-Moon Lagrange 1. Through the clear panel above him, the sky shimmered with pinpricks of light. The crowded corridors of post-Kessler orbit, where the new rules kept everything alive. Nothing stayed still for more than a heartbeat. Each satellite shifted minutely, part of an AI-driven swarm built for planned decay, mutual avoidance, and endless motion. Everyone remembered where they were when Mirov's ambitious attempt to add another mega-constellation to low orbit ended in disaster. The giant bulk launcher tore itself apart at second stage, and with 8 internet constellations already crowding low orbit, the blast spread through the sky like a spark in dry grass, triggering the Kessler cascade that forced the new rules into being. Adebayo had been holding a wafer cassette steady, while Adewale Ajayi slid in the next batch inside Uganda's first clean fabricator. The world had ended in silence beneath the hum of filtered air as the sky filled with burning assets, telecom networks collapsing one after another. The banks began to fail in the days that followed, as 2 recent graduates of the Sisters of Hope orphanage in Abuja, now searching for a new life in Uganda, they already understood how to live inside uncertainty. Adebayo caught his breath as Caduceus Wind came into view. The ship stretched ahead, half in shadow and half in light. It was built for grace as much as speed. He imagined it skimming past Mercury, releasing their transit shuttle for Aurelia Outpost, before entering its endless loop between the Sun and Earth. Its propulsion came from light itself, gigawatt. Laser arrays striking tiles designed to vaporize in measured bursts. Each pulse gave only a whisper of thrust, but sustained over months, it pressed the ship forward without wasted space. He laughed softly, remembering Adewale showing him an old video of Buzz Aldrin explaining his cycler vision now adapted for the Mercury-Earth and Venus-Earth corridors. A sharp worry cut through him as he thought of his adopted brother, who hadn't replied to his farewell message. "Where are you, Adewale?" he asked himself. Weeks later, Adebayo was called to the infirmary, where a medic was helping Levon Cross, senior technician, stay upright. Levon leaned against the man's shoulder, sweat streaking down his temples. Adebayo moved to assist, but seeing he was steady enough, he grinned. "Please tell me this is just a sore loser's hangover. I'll let you win next time." Levon managed a sheepish smile, the effort draining him as he doubled over and heaved into a bag, a greenish cast settling over his face. Everyone looked worn thin from the marathon to rescue the Mercury team. In every safety session, Adebayo led with the Aurelia station staff. No one ever spoke of anxiety, but it was always there. Knowing collapse was one software glitch away. Caduceus Wind had launched with the barest minimum, so the crew kept building the ship as it flew. Adebayo quickly earned his minimum welding hours, muscles aching from working against thrust, joints stiff from weeks of half-sleep and constant motion sickness. Malik Demir, the repair crew's chief, had a collar that was always dark with sweat that never had time to dry before the next shift, and his hands were raw from tool grips. The recycled air left everyone's mouths raw, tasting faintly of metal and exhaustion. Levon can barely stand, let alone finish 3 weeks of tight, physically demanding work at Helios Array. Suit him up, and you'll be pulling double duty the entire trip. The medic's voice stayed level, but his shoulders twitched with fatigue. He had spent too long under the same artificial gravity, too long watching the same faces wear down. Malik cursed under his breath, then glanced at Levon, the concern softening his voice. He's the only one who knows the array's guts, the only other person on the ship that has ever been on a maintenance run. Malik kept arguing with the medic while Adebayo tried to explain he was certified, when the ship's captain, Marcus Whitaker, cut in through the infirmary's intercom. Adebayo is certified to step in. Malik, you were the one who came up with this idea of fixing Helios Array's derate. You also cursed the statisticians when they wrote in the briefing that the expected number of lives saved is 5 souls, when you and I know it is a coin flip, and either everyone lives or everyone dies. So get yourselves into Lucky Break and improve those odds. Malik grunted. Fine. If Safety Shoes wants to play technician, then let's go. Adebayo dampened his natural inclination to bristle, smiled instead, and retorted, Captain's permission to join Lucky Break? Malik only grunted at the mocking response. Aiste glanced at Adebayo, then shook her head and buried herself in the pilot's controls. The clamps let go, and Lucky Break drifted clear. Aiste tapped the thrusters, setting their line toward Helios Array, roughly 3/4 of an astronomical unit from the sun. Malik watched the readouts as the secondary monitor, making sure they stayed clear of the 1 gigawatt beam driving Caduceus Wind. Whoa, we're getting a little close there. Don't burn us to a crisp. Aiste shot back, Do you want to fly this tub? Malik looked offended. Lucky Break is a hard-working lady. Be kind. The 3-person crew watched the bright spot on Caduceus Wind's aft, where the laser from Icarus Array at Earth-Moon Lagrange 1 steadily pushed the mothership sunward, away from Lucky Break. For a few seconds, they floated in silence, waiting. When a fraction of the beam split to nudge their own craft, they all exhaled in shared relief as the gentle, steady push took hold. They were finally safe from drifting powerless in deep space. A voice piped into the cockpit. Godspeed, Aiste chuckled. Fernando, the light delay is only about a minute. Screw up and you'll be hearing from me. Still amused, Fernando replied, Copy that. Malik glanced between Aiste and Adebayo in the cramped cockpit. The plan is simple. Get Helios Array back to full capacity to shave a week off the mothership's transit. We've got 3 weeks for the maintenance run. Then we race to catch them just past Venus. They sat in silence, each measuring how little margin for error those 3 weeks left them. As they neared the Helios Array, Aiste rotated Lucky Break for deceleration, planning short, hard chemical burns for the final approach. Adebayo stared out at the vast lattice of solar panels spreading across the dark. The heat radiators look like a giant Christmas tree. Malik rolled his eyes. The crew got along, but after several days crammed in the workship, patience ran thin. Yes, he said, a giant Christmas tree that'll cook us if we stray into the path of the heat plumes from the radiators. A mission reminder. A micrometeorite struck one of the joints last month, kinked a branch, and vented heat into its neighbors. Our mission is to straighten the branch and patch the damaged radiators. Aiste flew Lucky Break through a narrow shadow alley along the edge of the Christmas tree of radiators toward the habitat, at the base where it joined the sunshield. "Bad news, boss," she said. "Part of the path is blocked. Can you run an estimate of how much tolerance Lucky Break has if we dodge around it?" Malik quickly fed the flight path and shipped specs into the heat tolerance AI, his hands damp and unsteady, then gave her a quick thumbs up. Aiste adjusted the controls, and the ship slid into the band of concentrated heat. The hull creaked as the metallic frame absorbed the heat, expanding until a deep strain made the cabin hum. The air grew hot, and sweat ran down Adebayo's face as he gripped the armrests, holding on until Aiste eased them back into the shadow. The airlock hissed as pressure equalized between Lucky Break and the Helios Array habitat. Malik grinned at the whiteboard near the hatch where someone had scribbled "Happy Birthday" in thick marker. "Maintenance tradition," he said, when Adebayo and Aiste looked at him in confusion. "The captain leaves a note for the next crew. My old crew called me birthday boy last run when my kids called mid-transit to wish me happy 50th. Still smiling, he took a quick photo, wiped the board, and began writing a new task list. Adebayo watched Aiste shift to the far side of the cabin, her movements tight and deliberate. Adebayo wondered, what made her learn to suppress her emotions so completely? Malik looked up. "Adebayo, your primary task is to get the branch realigned." Adebayo nodded in confirmation. "Aiste." Malik's tone sharpened when he saw her attention slip and her head jerked up. "First test the working fluid. If there's excess water, filter it. Then inspect the hotspot the IR sensors flagged on Lucky Break's sunshield and patch it if needed. We don't want to fry before we head sunward. I'll balance inventory between the ship and the habitat. Call out when your tasks are complete and bad news. The mothership sent extra work that's cutting into our time budget." Everyone groaned at the overloaded schedule. Adebayo hooked his safety line to the guide rail along the Christmas tree's central shaft and made his way down toward the dead branch. His task was to recover one of the backup storage units an earlier EIC agent had used to store telemetry data on the Mina's star constellation. When he reached the site, he called, "Malik, one of the backup units looks cracked. If we ever need it, it could fail. Best to pull it now and slot in a spare." Malik asked, "Only that unit, then go ahead." He detached the module, secured it in his pouch, and inserted a replacement. The indicator lights turned green, and the array kept humming. Later, he reminded himself to mark the unit as lost. The orders kept coming from the mothership. "Align this, or since you are already there, swap this out." Malik swore under his breath while Aiste watched the burn margin slip. Each new job ate into their outbound window every extra day, meant a longer transfer, and more Delta V, which meant a higher load on their bodies. It was the kind of strain that blurred vision and thickened blood. Push too long, and a stroke was not theory, it was math. As Malik and Adebayo wrapped up their tasks, Aiste called out, her voice sharp, "Boss! The hotspots looked random at first, but they are not dust. Someone sabotaged our sunshield.